Fantastic. Thanks, Rob. Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for coming. So climate change, someone once described it as, can you hear me? Hopefully you can hear me. The slow motion end of the world is maybe not the most upbeat topic for a post-lunch session, but we will do our best to make it informative, practical, and calming as possible. The end of the world is not nigh, so bear with us. So I'm Stephen Sykes. I am a practicing environmental lawyer, specializing in commercial real estate, head of climate and environment at Capital Law in Cardiff, work with other law firms like Herbert Smith and so on and so forth. Been very heavily involved with the development of this practice note with Alistair and an army of lawyers, I mean, dozens and dozens of us. But I've also been involved on the search side of this challenge, co-founding Argyle Environmental many years ago, helping Dan and Groundshaw with Climate Index, more recently Martello, and a company called Geodata Labs. Anyway, in putting this brief introduction together, I was reflecting, amazingly, it's been 25 years since the contaminated land warning card. So I dusted it down and read what it had to say about good practice. And all it had to say about searchers was that we as conveyancers should suggest to our client that they might want to obtain an independent site report. That was it. That was the guidance that was given to thousands upon thousands of real estate lawyers back then. And what did the sector do? Not with much enthusiasm, but over time, took it on board, adjusted practice, and life went on. My personal view is compared to that practice note, the one that's been produced on climate change, which is a complex issue, is more helpful. It's got a checklist. It's got standard reporting clauses. It's got information about the different climate risks for those who want it. It's more user-friendly. That's the intent. And mainly, it marks a shift in where environment, where climate change sits as an exposure for us as citizens and for us as lawyers, really. And it sets out, not optionally, this is not an option, this is a statement of good practice, that whether you're acting on the lender side or the home buyer side, that we have to have regard to, we should have regard to. Format for the next 38 minutes or so is the panelists will make short speeches. Really short speeches, guys. There will be a discussion on practical issues which we encounter day to day, set against a backdrop of light touch compliance. How do you get through this in such a way that you can carry on doing primarily what you do, that it's not a distraction? And then we'll open it up to questions from the floor, ask anything. So let's get started with first speaker, Alistair Cameron, a bit more about the practice note. Alistair.
I'm somewhat hesitant to do this, but can I have a show of hands as to how many people in this room have actually read the climate change practice note? So that's pretty good, actually, but I would say we're probably about two-thirds-ish or so, a third if not. It's also a relief to me that people are indeed reading it. So what I'll say is I'll start off with a pretty basic point. When I was asked to do this panel, it was, what do you need to know? And I'll say, everything that you need to know is within the practice note. If it doesn't state something, for example, you need to ensure XYZ risks are included in your search, then you don't need to consider it. So I think a really key point is that you need to go right back to reading it in full, and at minimum, if you've not read it, read the checklist. And that goes through some really practical steps that you need to take in sequence in order to fulfill the requirements as we deem is necessary to ensure that you're, you know, engaging in best practice on this issue. So what are the two kind of key components then as to what's involved in best practice? I would see it in terms of two different ways. So one is, I think a lot of the focus has been around searches, and that's rightfully so in the context of this conversation. But a big part is to talk about broader legal liabilities in the context of climate change. So the practice note at the beginning sets out physical risks, liability risks, transition risks, and explains you don't need to be an expert in all of these. Understanding them at that conceptual level is useful. You need to understand, basically, where the property, climate change, and legal liabilities intersect. So that could be areas such as riparian obligations, it could be planning conditions, or it could be minimum energy efficiency standards. So I would say that's a big chunk that I think a lot of people aren't necessarily thinking about. And then the other big chunk, of course, is thinking about got new products on the market, which can look at climate searches and long-term risks. What do you need to do there? And simply put, what the practice note says is you don't need to order a search. Doesn't say that anywhere. I think some people have read it in that way. It simply says that you need to ask your client as to whether they want a search or not. After which, you need to engage in, I think a lot of this practice notes is process-driven and also competency-based, so understanding those risks as I kind of outlined before. But secondly as well, making sure that you get it in writing, depending on the client's decision, and putting it in the relevant disclosures to them. That is the kind of two main key practical perspectives of the practice note. The other thing that I would also add as well is that the reason why this practice note was developed was in response to the climate change guidance that we published in 2023. What happened when we published that guidance, which addresses all solicitors? I think some conveyancers might feel that they're being sectioned out on this, that they're being specifically told they need to think about climate change. That is indeed not the case, because our climate change guidance from 2023 addresses the whole profession. Simply put, when we published that guidance, a lot of the feedback we got was from the property industry and solicitors asking, well, what do I need to do? I need more detailed advice. Hence why we went forward and we drafted the practice note and engaged in a lot of consultation. And as Stephen said, this was a conveyancer solicitor-led endeavor, and the people who were working most closely on it and championing it were conveyancers themselves, or property professionals, lawyers. So what is the benefit then of this? What is the opportunity? I think we're talking a lot about the risks with it, but what's the opportunity? And I'd leave here two things to think about. One is that the opportunity here is that all other professionals are going to need to be thinking about climate change. This is not distinct to lawyers necessarily. Other professionals in property transactions, such as surveyors, are as well. By doing this and understanding where the line is drawn as to where your duties begin and end, it helps you, it aids you, it protects you. In fact, you are very clear as to what the role of the solicitor is and where the role begins for other professionals. We're the first to really directly address that question with distinct bespoke guidance on that issue. We imagine that other professional bodies and regulators will do also in the future. But we've already kind of been on the front foot of this in terms of thinking about it. And the second thing I would say to be thinking about in terms of opportunity is the new lines of advice that you can provide. A lot of the time people say to me, oh, well, my clients aren't asking me about climate change. But ultimately, clients aren't going to ask questions that they don't know that they're able to get this information, that this is something that they could be concerned about. And I would say maybe that's not as sharp as it is today, but as continually as we see the impacts of climate change become more and more profound, it probably will sit more squarely in the minds of clients, and their solicitors will hopefully be able to step in and hopefully advise them further.
Thank you, Alistair. So we'll now hear from the amazing cashiers from Groundshaw on climate searches in practice, with you being involved way back on the first climate search that was launched in England and Wales. Cat, 3 minutes.
So hi everyone, Catherine Shires, Customer Engagement Director at Groundshaw. As Stephen said, I've been at Groundshaw for a while, about 14 years, so my background is in environmental searches. We as a business have been specifically involved with climate searches since around 2022. We anticipated the Law Society was going to issue guidance on climate change, so we developed our climate index module. So if you use a Groundshaw search, you're probably well aware of this. Our approach is to kind of take that super complex scientific information and make it as into a seamless process as possible. So rather than developing a standalone search, we decided to integrate into our core environmental searches because we basically wanted to make climate change information accessible. We didn't want to create extra burdens for solicitors. Integrated it into our core enviros for resi and commercial. And to date, we've seen it be used in over 1 million transactions. And the majority of the time, about 80% of cases don't actually identify any risks at all. So that's quite positive. Again, as I've said, we wanted to make the process as frictionless as possible. So alongside the searches, and just to make everything super simple, we've drafted sample paragraphs for client engagement letters, client care clauses, which can just be inserted straight into your report on title. And we were also part of the drafting committee for the Chancery Lane Project's Marnie's Clause. For us, from a content perspective, in terms of what's included in a climate search, for us, it's not a box-ticking exercise. It doesn't have to include absolutely everything that's referenced in the practice note. One thing I will say is, from a Groundshaw perspective, we want to deliver something that's meaningful and actually is actionable for our clients. And we have to, at the end of the day, stand by the analysis that we are presenting to you guys. For us, the practice note is a really good step forward. But what I will say is, any search that you are using, just make sure that all of the risks can kind of link back to the key themes around insurability, mortgageability. You know, can your client actually purchase that property with the means that they want to? Ensure that the information is property specific and also that it's not going to affect their enjoyment at the end of the day.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kat. Now, an old friend of mine, Ollie Baldock from Ashfield. Ollie's a scientist, and the question I posed to him is, what should a client do where one of these searches comes back and it's a red flag, it's a fail? Okay, where do you go? Signposting that, and hopefully you're talking about that, Ollie. We'll talk
about that a little bit, yeah. Hi everyone, Ollie Baldock, Director at Ashfield Solutions, which is environmental risk consultancy. I thought I'd just start by kind of illustrating, I guess, some real world examples where Ashfield has been involved in effectively climate perils. You know, we're all used to seeing on TV, you know, wildfires in California or, you know, people's belongings floating down the street after a major flood event. But I think what we don't see is the long-term tail effect from those events, the impact it has on people and on property over a prolonged period. So just to give one example, some of you may be familiar with the wildfires in Wennington in London in 2022. There were a number of others at the same time, actually, but Wennington was the one that kind of really made the news. 19 homes were destroyed in those fires, and Ashfield has been involved in environmental surveys on almost all of those properties as part of the rebuild program. So we're nearly 3 years on, and very few of those houses are habitable again. So for those individuals, that's, you know, one event that's, you know, impacted their lives, but has also taken 3+ years, probably 4 or 5 years before they're back in their homes. And a number of those properties weren't insured either. So I'm sure they were insured at the time they got their mortgages, but they weren't insured when the event happened. Equally, if we talk about flood risk, which is, you know, one of the dominant climate hazards that we face in the UK, the average time that a person is out of their home following a flood event is 9 months. So it's not just the event that we see on TV, it's the aftermath and how it affects people. Coming back then to what can we do about it, and if we get a search report that flags a risk, again, to use flood risk as an example, because it is one of the dominant hazards we have in the UK, Ashfield specialises in providing follow-on flood risk reports. So we will do a deeper dive. They are consultant-led. We will look at ingress points on a property, property thresholds, have a deeper dive on the mapping, look at LiDAR data, and provide practical recommendations for home buyers. And we also work with insurers with their implementing Flood Re's Build Back Better scheme. So this is where people's properties have been flooded and they have access to some funding so that when they rebuild the property, they don't just make it like for like, they install property flood resilience measures, which means that if they get flooded again, they don't have the same level of damage. And these measures can look exactly, you know, you have a flood door replacing a previous front door, and it could look no different. So these aren't modifications to homes that have to look any different to the way the home looked before. But they are very, very effective. And, you know, for example, a mid-terrace house, for £5,000 or £6,000, you could protect that to, you know, 0.6 metres of flood water. But we don't see a huge uptake in these things. And I think that probably will change as awareness grows with things like the Law Society Practice Note, hopefully encouraging more of this climate data into reports. So just to wrap up my point, we can't manage what we don't measure. And so I think that, you know, I've been involved in climate risk data over the last 5 or 6 years. Started in 2019, where I was part of a data pilot for NatWest Bank. And I've been involved with various organizations, helping them to integrate climate risk data ever since. And I think that this, the Law Society Practice Note is a logical evolution from everything I've seen. The level of sophistication in the data that's available now compared to what it was in 2019 is pretty incredible, really. You know, this is good, solid data. So the data's there, it's in the reports, we just need to get it to home buyers as early as possible so that they can take advice and make a decision.
Thanks very much, Ollie. Now I'd like to invite Edward from Howdens to talk about insurance, which has cropped up several times already. Edward, your thoughts, please, on this area.
Good afternoon. My name's Edward Dunn. We're for Howden and the insurance brokers. We act for approximately 1,500 law firms in this country, many of them involved in conveyancing, which is the honour that I got to sit in front of you today. I should point out at this stage, it turns out I have skin in the game. I bought a house in Lymington, which is by the sea, and surrounded by the New Forest. So researching for today didn't cheer me up.
Yeah.
Well, my apologies. Okay.
So it's whether the wildfire gets it first or whether it collapses into the English Channel.
Can the people hear me now? Cool. Going well. How about that? I'll just do it with my voice.
How about this one? Take this one.
Give it a go. I'm so sorry. It's nothing like dying on stage in front of your customer base. At least it was memorable for once from an insurance guy. Okay, and breathe. I'm actually trying to reach for my cigarettes at this point. So my name's Edward Dunn. I work for Howden, the insurance broker. We act for about 1,500 legal entities, many of them involved in the conveyancing industry, and we're very proud of our work with licensed conveyancers. Doing my work to find out all about climate change, I discovered that buying a house in Lymington by the sea, surrounded by the New Forest, may not have been a long-term plus. So I do take this very seriously, and I did read the practice note. Really, a couple of things. Obviously, professional indemnity insurance is rather down the line, so it's not an immediate thing, but I did want to touch on a couple of things about insurance so that you understood it, because whatever, however this turns out, any claims made against underwriters will be in years to come. So underwriters don't have a very strong view, apart from the fact that they will raise their eyebrows, that a conveyancer is taking on more liability, okay, by engaging with this, and I hope you'll charge for it when you're doing the work, if you choose to do it. So an underwriter would want to see either you are going to do it and how you're going to do it, or you're not going to do it, and your letter of engagement is very, very specifically directed of what you will and you won't do. Because what needs to happen in the event of a claim is that we have a file that we can defend you from allegations that you did not carry out the work that the member of the public expected, so that you know the consumer in this case will always have a beneficial view from the judge and the courts. It will always be the professional who has to fight back and defend, so please do so. I'm working on the assumption if you do it, you will outsource it. You might be sensible to look at the insurance that that outsourcer carries so that you've got some recourse in the event that something goes wrong. Sorry, I come from a long line of being quite gloomy about this. I'm sure it's going to be fine. But I was invited up to tell you what I thought. But I'm sure it will be fine. You, as lawyers and conveyancers, licensed conveyancers, have the strongest insurance policy in the world, in that even if your business closes, you carry 6 years runoff cover. That is not the same as your providers will have and others around you. So I'm afraid, as ever, it will come down to your insurance. I also wanted to make a general point about climate change, risk, resilience. The insurance industry can't pay for it all and won't be able to. Now, I'll give you examples of what happens when the insurance industry says we can't do this. You'll be familiar with Pool Re. Now, that insures properties in central London following the IRA bombing campaigns when we could not provide cover at sensible prices. Then you've got things like cladding and fire safety. All you're seeing post-Grenfell is a series of lawyers batting away the liability from their client. Eventually that will settle, but we still have people trapped in buildings. I noted from the Times the other day about FloodRe. FloodRe is an amazing thing. It provides as a joint venture between the taxpayer, or some people call it government, the taxpayer and the insurance industry. And they built a vehicle that enables people who've had houses built in unfortunate areas, frankly, to obtain affordable insurance. That contract has 23 years to run from this year, according to the Times. So if you're working with a 25-year mortgage, you have to look at the last 2 years and question. There is no guarantee that FloodRe will be renewed except by you, the taxpayer. And I think that's worth pointing out in this context. So to repeat, whatever decision you make about how you're going to handle it, be very clear that if you're going to do it, that the client understands exactly the process, whether you're outsourcing, whether you're taking no responsibility whatsoever, because that is what your insurance underwriter would want to see. And I'm sorry about the beginning bit, but that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thanks for raising our spirits, Edward. Thank you very much. Follow that, Richard. So basically, Richard is from Map Impact, and if I can summarise, climate risk is about all manner of physical risks, some of which have been in, I guess, front and centre for a few years, like flood risk, coastal erosion, subsidence. I think I've got it right, Richard. It's the new stuff, like the new forest blazing, yeah, that is of interest to yourself. So the floor's yours. And I think there's a slide.
Absolutely, yeah. So I'm a data scientist by background, so I come from that perspective. I did choose to have a slide to sort of emphasise some of the things that I'll talk about for a couple of minutes. And I'm going to read off a couple of statistics that I've got written down here. So 2025 has had the warmest spring on record in the UK. 2025 has had the sunniest spring on record in the UK. 2025 has had the sixth driest spring on record in the UK. And by mid-April, there were more wildfires in the UK than there had been in any other complete year. So my point here, and the point with the image on the screen, is that this is happening. It's not going away. It's something that we have to take into account in our daily lives. Things are changing. What we do at Map Impact is produce property-specific susceptibility information for emerging heat-related climate risks, which are heat stress, drought and water stress, and wildfire. And all of this is grounded in academia and data science, which is my background. But looking at something that Kat said, what we really focus on is actually simplifying that information and making it more accessible. So my mission is to simplify insights, essentially, make it easy to consume and make it easier for inclusion in reports and similar things. I just want to elaborate a little bit on the example that Ollie started with in Wennington, which is quite a famous wildfire that happened in 2022. So wildfire costs more than flood risk. The chances are less, although they're increasing, but the costs are much greater. So to just elaborate on that, when we looked at the building cost information service around the estimates of what a property would cost to rebuild in Wennington, you'd be looking at about £350,000 to £400,000 per property, because this is something where there's complete loss. So it's a complete rebuild. On top of that, there was a local authority emergency fund put together for those 19 properties, and that cost about another £60,000 per property. So you've got significant costs coming against this. It's something that is reasonably binary. A house burns down or it doesn't. It's not like flood where new carpets have to be put in and so on and so forth. It's quite serious implications. In our view, the Law Society have done a good job with launching this practice note. It means that all you have to do is get a search and just make sure that the right data is inside that search. We already have our data going into some search report providers with others coming online soon. And just going back to, we've mentioned insurance throughout. The data we've provided, it is new. It's these new climate risks. We've got it being used by several insurers already and lenders beginning to use it as well to understand what the impact of these new climate risks is across their whole portfolio.
Brilliant. Thanks, Richard. So we have a panel discussion, not for that long, because we want to make sure there's time for questions from the floor. The first question I've got, which will be for like 30 seconds, from Kat, Ollie and Richard, is can you just take us through the underlying science and Ollie touched on it, the rigour of what goes into these climate searches, where the data comes from, how it's put together. Kat first.
So the data that we use is all from reputable providers. You always need to make sure that it's based on, I guess, scientific evidence. So with climate change, there's these things called RCPs. They're essentially different emission scenarios, kind of like how warm is the planet going to get, the likelihood of things happening. That's basically the science that kind of underpins the information that goes into the searches.
But it's, maybe Ollie can chip in, it's Met Office, Ollie. Where's the data coming from? And how good is this data?
Yeah, so virtually all of these data sets, I think, will be using Met Office UK climate projections. So that's probably true for your data, is that right,
Rich? That's right. Yeah.
So that's the latest climate projections that are scaled to the UK and taking into account UK context. Just a perspective on that is that I think I said before, you know, I kind of, 2019 started my journey in sort of climate risk data, and at that point there was one climate subsidence data set. There was, I think, one flood climate data set, which was only at postcode level that I'm aware of. And so, you know, in a relatively short space of time to get where we are with this entire suite of very real climate risks modelled out at a very granular level, with, and Rich can probably talk to this, with a lot of academic rigour behind them, I think is pretty impressive, actually.
Right, the reason why I asked is because there was a webinar a couple of weeks back, and a practice support lawyer in one of the big London firms described the climate searches as just superficial skims data, and I thought, hold on a minute, I think they're a bit more rigorous than that, so I just wanted you to hear it. They were in a commercial law context. Commercial lawyers have had a mixed reaction to the use of climate searches. The residential sector is probably 80% uptake. Hats off, because that's no mean feat in a sector where you've got your hands full. You've got a lot on your plates anyway, but there's been a stepping up, even in spite of all that, which I think is commendable. Next question briefly is this practice note. Alistair, what is a practice note? Just for reminders, what's the legal status of this? Is it optional? Is it not?
Just briefly before I answer that point around to do with the searches themselves, one thing I think that is important to recognise, and part of what this practice note is trying to push, is that we talk about the role of the surveyor within it. My understanding is that the searches aren't necessarily that property specific in terms of the nature of the building. That is where we need other professionals also to come in. So we do reference many points in thinking about how you might need to instruct a specialist surveyor, what the availability is of them out there, and hopefully we should see more solicitors beginning to ask surveyors to advise on these physical risks, because all professionals have a part to play in this. In terms of the actual status of the practice note, again, goes to my initial point, everything that's in the practice note you need to know is inside it, and it says at the head that it's not legal advice, and it's the Law Society's view of best practice. That is our position on the matter. In terms of what that means more broadly speaking, you know, most firms I speak to, if best practice is here, they want to make sure from a, you know, liability perspective they're above there. And to that end, we would say that's why you should be incorporating the practice notes guidance into your practice.
Great. Keep an eye on the time. I'm going to open it up to the floor. I'm going to actually pick the first person to raise a question because we have the legend who is Rob Stevens from Nationwide in the room, Rob. And even if you haven't thought of a question, you've got 3 seconds to think of a question. At least probably to give the insight from lenders as of 2025 and what you guys are doing on this space. Because we want to know, don't we? I think we want to know.
Okay, I'm not sure I've got a question, but I can provide a bit of an update.
Okay.
So it's an ad hoc 1 minute presentation. I think from a lender perspective, we're looking at climate change from two sides. There's physical risk that we've talked about today, but there's also transitional risk when it comes to retrofitting properties and EPCs, etc. I think the main point for us is we are lending potentially over a 40-year term to a customer, and it's understanding what's going to happen within that period of time as best as we can. I've been dealing with climate models and climate data for the last decade, and it's fair to say it's evolved a huge amount in that time period. There are still things, though, that people need to be aware of. A lot of the models have similar baseline data, but there'll be different assumptions within those, and it's understanding those assumptions, and it's also understanding the RAG ratings associated with those. I think the main thing, though, from a consumer perspective, is does the customer understand all of this? So you've got the elements of the property today, but also the potential future liabilities and costs. And I think that's where we all play our part when it comes to lending, of how we inform the consumer and make sure that they are emotionally and financially able to adapt and deal with those potential costs for a period of time. Because it's not necessarily responsible for us to lend to somebody at 95% loan to value on a property that may suddenly have really high insurance costs, because do they understand the only reason they're getting insurance today is because of flood re that's potentially going to end in 2039? Or do they understand that the property is quite close to the coast? You and I both live very close to the coast. We're not far too far apart. I live in a place called Highcliffe. The clue's in the question. There's a lot of coastal erosion there. And is the customer in a situation where they've paid the right amount for the property based upon that? So have they factored in what they're paying today, what the future costs are, and how long they tend to live in the property for whatever their enjoyment is? And I think we've been dealing with climate data at mortgage origination for a long period of time, and we will make risk-based decisions if we think a property is too risky for us to lend upon it. So you will never see a property that I think is too risky, because I will have stopped it before it gets to you. Lenders are introducing their own policies and using climate data to help make that decision.
Rob, roughly how many times are you doing that? How many sites properties don't get through?
It's not a huge number. It's a couple of percent of properties at the moment. But again, as we start to learn more, you start to understand more. It's around, we're going to say no from a risk perspective. That doesn't mean that somebody doesn't want to buy that property. It's a question of, do they want to buy that property and at what price, and are they understanding what they're looking to do?
Yeah.
If you're only planning to be in a property for 3 years, you might not care. But it's a question of, are you going in eyes wide open? And I think all of our jobs collectively in the industry is how we help inform the consumer so they make that educated decision. Now, we're at the beginning of that journey. I think this guidance is the first step. We're all kind of finding our way through this as the data evolves, our understanding evolves. Ultimately, if you were to go back 10 years, these models are completely different to where they were now, and they're highlighting different risks and different accuracies. I think that the biggest problem for all of us is when there is an issue or something does flag, who is there to talk and explain to the customer in a language that they understand what are the risks and are they willing to take them on? Because generally, and this is kind of my big concern with some of this data, is if a consumer only finds this out at the back end of the process, they are already emotionally and financially committed to that transaction, do not necessarily want to hear that, and aren't maybe in a position to make a rational decision, which is why we need to get as much of this information available at the beginning of the process if we can, so people are going into it eyes wide open.
Fantastic. No. Rob, I put you on the spot. You rose to the challenge. Time's ticking away. Questions from the floor. just raise your hand and say who you are and what your question is, and don't be shy. But if you are shy, actually, someone at the back. We don't buy, do we?
Sorry, me again. I've got here something from an expert which says the underlying models used to create late century climate forecasts are not accurate. And this is basically, you know, we know that we're damaging the environment. What's your response to this expert basically saying that it's all to do with, hang on, let me just see, it says sorry, they don't have, it's to do with the algorithms and the scoring and what is open source, paywall, proprietary, and closed box rules applied to an address.
You haven't got the name of the person that's saying that?
Somebody called Michael Lawson, Chief Executive of Property Risk Inspection Limited.
Okay, don't know. Anyone want to raise their hand and rebuff the, or comment otherwise on the science that underpins the report, the models that underpin the report?
Sorry, can you just recap the question?
I think the gist of it is that there's been a comment in the property world from one person in the property world critiquing the underlying climate models, which I guess feed through to the climate searchers, and without knowing in any great detail where they're coming from. I mean, anyone can criticise anything, but why, where they're coming from, what is the weakness in the model? But can you just perhaps respond on the robustness of the model, or whether you encounter those kind of criticisms elsewhere?
I'll have a go, yeah. It's absolutely fair to say that a climate model is just a model, and it's got uncertainty inherent in that. So I think you need to look at these things indicatively. So if we're looking at, even for example, a flood model where we've got a projected flood depth mid-century or late century, we have to acknowledge that that is based on a whole load of assumptions, like every model is. But it gives us an indication that things are getting worse. So I think we need to step back from all these models and just understand that they are just models, but they help us to judge whether something's getting better or worse and by what magnitude. So that's the first point. The second point on that is that Kat mentioned these RCPs, the representative concentration pathways. There are different pathways that we might go on as a country, depending on, you know, when we reach net zero, etc. If you take, for example, RCP 8.5, there are strong arguments to suggest that that is an unlikely scenario because it assumes, you know, highly excessive consumption, lots of emissions, and a hothouse future, which many argue we're not going to get to. So I think there's a choice of the model that you adopt within your, you know, within the search report or within your analysis, which will influence that. That's probably it for me.
Okay, one thing from me, and then I'm going to wrap, actually, because we're down to about 2 minutes to go. One, I would say that, you know, a lot of people have got skin in the game here. Banks have got the skin in the game. The Bank of England's got skin in the game. Insurers have as well. They all have their own models involving actuaries, mathematicians, and the like. They take data, and they crunch it and recrunch it and refine the model and so forth. It's the best that you can do to get a handle on the risk, and I say that as a former environmental underwriter. The Bank of England's model is saying something like, last time I looked at it, £500 billion worth of transition risk exposure by 2050. So they've got a number. We all know it's happening. You know, so I think if there are critiques saying it's not great, well, okay, tell me what's better, I would say. So, you know, you have to be open to it, not defensive, but without knowing the nitty-gritty of that critique, it's hard to comment more. Right, 2 minutes to go, so wrapping up, thank you to all the panellists for their discussion. I think maybe one of the main takeaways from today, for a very busy residential conveyancing profession, is that the practice note's in, it's not going away, it's not going to be repealed. It may be reviewed from time to time, like the contaminated land one was or the flood risk one was, but not for a while. It's dealing with an issue which is no longer abstract, it is real. Who'd have thought wildfires in the UK, for crying out loud? Who'd have thought we would have that? I think it's saying that climate change is not just a scientific issue, it does have legal repercussions. I mean, Rob's house that might fall into this, well, I hope it doesn't, and Edwards, you know, the value of that property is being shored up by coastal defences. There's law around that, which tells you, you know, whether a public body is obliged to maintain those sea defences or not. And guess what? They're not. It's a discretion. It's a power. They'll do it if they've got the money. They'll do it if they're told to do it. They won't necessarily do it. So if you had a climate search and it flagged that Holland's a coastal search, maybe you pass just a few sentences about the law that actually you might want to take account. It's just another thing. But by and large, you're trying to signpost solutions. Who can you go to for the flood risk mitigation that means you're okay, so long 60 centimetres of flood water that Ollie talked about, that your house is okay. You're trying to find that kind of thing. What I think this is not trying to do is turn us into climate scientists. I spent most of my career working with scientists, but I'm not a climate scientist. It's trying to tell us when to judge a risk as being material or not. And some of that's a gut thing, because you're dealing with thousands of conveyancing transactions year in, year out. And if there is an issue, where do you go? And it's also a bit defensive. It's kind of document this decision making for the PI reasons that Edward said, so that you've done the right thing. You know, 25 years ago, I started out by saying we had this Law Society warning card, and it kind of changed the profession to some extent. I genuinely think this is better. I think it is clearer. I think take the light touch approach, like Alice said, read the checklist, implement the checklist is probably the best thing you can do. So, finished. Thanks for coming. Appreciate your contribution today. Enjoy the rest of the conference, and maybe a little round of applause, not for me, because I'm just hosting it, but for these guys.